This is the RAP meeting for, excuse me. And we'll go ahead and now that we've got the recording going, why don't we take a roll call?
I'll do that for you, Greg. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have James Fidel, Mikey O'Connor, Faisal Sharp, Greg Aaron, Barry Kopp, Martin Sutton, Rod Rasmussen. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And if I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking. Thank you. Over to you, Greg.
Thank you, Gisela. All right, our agenda for today is to continue through the remaining issues for discussion, and then we'll move on to material we have on cyber squatting and uniformity of contracts. We will then review the schedule of our meetings leading up to publication of our initial report and the ICANN meeting in Kenya. So, first item on the agenda was offensive sites / gripe sites. The action item from last meeting was that Faisal was going to draft some material for our consideration. So, Faisal, I don't recall seeing anything. Do we have some material?
You know, I didn't recall that I was going to draft something. I mean, I did do some research and talk to some people, and I could put something together based on that. But basically, I think it boils down to the fact that, we talked a little bit about an intersection between the free speech and whether offensive names, even tied to brand holders, for example, would fall into cyber squatting. I think, after looking at it and talking to a lot of these brand holders, I think it does fall within cyber squatting to some degree. But I think there is a distinction, and I think the distinction that has to be made that I've seen, maybe this is kind of where I might have been falling down last time or coming out last time, and that was that maybe what we're talking about here is purely just offensive words. For example, the Carlin 7 offensive words, and whether or not those. Maybe those names are of a type that just need to be maybe even reserved as opposed to being allowed to be registered. So, for example, .us registry, and I took a look at some of the words, the 7 words, and it looks like they don't allow you to register those names. And maybe offensive words, maybe the 7 words, the Carlin 7 offensive words, dirty words, are perhaps fall outside the cyber squatting and maybe should be given different consideration than maybe a name that actually even attaches to something else. Even though I think a name, even a dirty word that attaches to even something that is even more inflammatory is a problem. I'm not sure how we get around the whole cyber squat. Whether it falls within cyber squatting or not. I think it probably would get pushed there. So anyway, that's kind of my thought on this issue.
So I have a question, Faisal. This is Greg. It sounds like as far as if this is an abuse, it sounds like you're proposing that there are two parties that are harmed, one of which is the brand owner. But the other, if there are 7 dirty words, it seems to indicate that there's a special harm about those. And somebody else is getting harmed, anyone who comes across them or sees them.
And then actually, I think I would put those in two separate categories. I think that's right. I think probably the more inflammatory category is just the 7 dirty words that are offensive. I'm not sure how we get around putting a dirty word along with a brand, and somehow expecting that it's not going to fall within, the cyber squatting issues.
Okay. Martin had raised his hand, and then James.
Thanks. I've been wrestling with this one in terms of Now, how practical is it to segregate these types of domain names that are registered? One thought that occurs to me is that if you have any way of blocking explicit terms, that the offending parties will actually just go to more easier names that people will get trapped into search engines, so that results of searches come up higher. This is kind of like a swings and roundabouts, but if somebody is putting an expletive plus brand into a search engine, then they're presumably after something, whereas if they just put the brand in, they're probably expecting a result suitable to that brand. So I kind of feel that these are lower risk whenever I've looked at offensive websites, because it is where people expect some unusual results. They're not expecting something from a well-known brand. So I personally would probably put park this under cyber squatting. Where that gives me grief then is the fact that there is potential for consumer harm, brand owner harm, and ineffective UDRP, really, because I wouldn't take anything like that to UDRP. I would try and just settle it outside or ignore it. So I'm having trouble really thinking about a practical way, even when you're talking about listing certain expletives as a blacklist, because then you're probably going to get caught up with different languages as well as they come on board, and the different IDNs. That's me.
Okay. James?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. This is James speaking, and I think Martin made a couple of points that are noteworthy. And I just wanted to put out for discussion to the group that we keep using the term words, but these are, in fact, text strings, and strings can behave differently than words, because you can combine or concatenate strings together, and they can form words, because humans in different languages are looking at the combination of a string to try and see if there's a word meaning in there. There are a couple of famous examples that I won't bring up here where someone has very innocently tried to put together words, but in the center of that long string there are recognizable either expletives or brands. I'm also concerned a little bit with the idea of, as Martin said, that trying to keep ahead not only of the different languages, but also the evolution, the continuous evolution of slang and other different types of pejoratives that might pop up over time. And finally, those are so easily gained by perhaps removing or substituting hyphens for vowels that the intent is understood pretty readily, but the idea of a blacklist is thwarted. So I just wanted to put out the challenges of this problem and recommend once again that, if there is a detectable brand and it seems to be intentional and being used in bad faith, I think we have a tool, imperfect as it may be. We have the UDRP that we can bring to bear on those on those situations, and the other ones, I think that we start to go down the path of cleaning up the internet, and I'm not sure that that's something we want to be undertaking. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next is Mikey.
Thanks, Greg. This is Mikey. I just want to reiterate the concern that I've got that basically revolves around free speech, which is that anti-corporate or anti-brand speech is protected speech, and I think we're getting very close to that when we start talking about this. So I'm just stating again on the record that I'm against it. I'm fine with cyber squatting, but I am very uncomfortable indeed with legislating speech on the internet.
Okay. Martin here. I think that's a good point. Again, I was just I'd missed out on my list of items there, Mikey. It in fact sometimes is a good place for brand owners to go to. So I often use some of those rant sites, because within there is sometimes hidden some valuable messages which we take action on, either to correct something for a consumer or within a system. So sometimes there's some little gems in there that actually work well for us. It's a shame that customers don't feel inclined to come to us first of all to talk us through the issue, but sometimes it's easier just to have a bit of a rant. So if consumers navigate themselves to those sites, they're navigating themselves there for a reason. They want to rant. I'm quite happy with that. I don't want us to go down the route of trying to curtail free speech. I think where there is an issue is where there are people taking branded domains, adding some terms to that, and it doesn't matter in what context, but monetizing it. So they're peddling away off the back of a brand owner's benefit. And who gets harmed is not just the brand owner. Normally it is the consumer in some way or another. And behind all of that, you've got registry, registrar, and ICANN community, and the registrant not really feeling any problem at all. It's all targeted at the brand owner and the consumers. And this is probably where I go back to the point that perhaps it should be parked under cyber squatting, but still with that caveat that it's ineffective for the mass problem of cyber squatting. It's ineffective.
And this is Mikey again, just to follow up on Martin's point. I agree entirely with that. And that's why I'm so keen on using the sort of well-trodden paths of cyber squatting and UDRP to address this. I think when we get into the speech half, you know, legislating lists of words or even intent sometimes, I think we stray far away from useful tools. And that's really where I get uncomfortable. But in terms of cyber squatting, where a brand owner is being harmed and also the unsuspecting consumer is being harmed, I'm there 100%.
Okay. This is Greg. I'm going to go to Faisal, and then I'm going to take the floor for a second. Faisal, go ahead.
Yeah, to Martin's point, I totally I agree with Martin. I guess I would just make one distinction. I mean, I think there is, and Mike talked about free speech, and I think that's right. But I guess the issue is really offensive word. We're talking gripe sites versus some offensive. You know, you take the, again, I keep going back to the 730 words with George Carlin. You know, I'm putting that with a brand, which then I think maybe it's not so much gripe site as it is something else. Okay, but putting that aside for just a moment, because I think you do have this overlay of free speech that Mikey's talking about, and I totally get that. But you know what happens when you take an expletive plus Jerry's Kids, or some other organization that is not a brand holder, and now there's a different connotation to it, and maybe. It, what is the reason for that? So I guess from making the point that I understand the gripe sites, I understand the free question then comes into what you have these offensive words, but what's the use of these offensive words in certain contexts? And maybe there's been one registry.us that said, look, we're just pulling out all those words. I'm just throwing it out as to put it into context of how we should be looking at it.
Okay, this is Greg. I mean, U.S. is an interesting example because it's not an ICANN regulated TLD; it's a CC TLD.
Right.
So it takes its direction from its government, and I don't know if Newstar has to comb every domain name string to pull out or flag certain strings. I know maybe they registered just those seven names. I don't know exactly how it works. Anyway, by the by.
Hey, Greg, I think they might have just this five. They might have just registered those seven names. I don't know either.
Yeah, but that, anyway, but that's by the by. One of my two cents is that, I don't know, I read an interesting article on Domain Name Wire this morning. It was from an intellectual property attorney, and he said, actually, the problem for him is that the UDRP decisions in this area are inconsistent. It may not be evenly applied. So it strikes me as one of those items that gets maybe slotted under UDRP, which is, here's another example of something that might be examined by a UDRP working group. Anyway, I'll say one more thing, which is I'm becoming increasingly aware of how close February is. We had some discussion on this topic last meeting. We've had some more now. I'm going to propose that we close discussion. What we really need, folks, is some background text and proposed recommendations. In other words, something in writing. So that's where we really need to go now that we've had some oral discussion. Do I have a volunteer to write material by the next meeting?
Well, I'll go ahead and do that for the offensive words, right? Is that what you're talking about, this section?
Yeah, offensive site and gripe site. So we need background material which briefly explains the issue, briefly explains, you know, what we discussed, and then comes up with draft recommendations. And then we can all add material, edit, et cetera.
Hey, Greg, if there's a way you can send me that article, I'd like to take a look at it, too.
Yeah, I'll send it around. I'll send around the link.
Martin here. Do you want, Faisal, I'll be happy to join up with you on that one.
Okay, I'll put it together, Martin, and I'll send it to you, and you can take a look at it.
Okay, thanks.
Can you deliver that to the group no later than Friday afternoon so we have it for our next Monday meeting?
Yep. I'll do that.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you. Excellent. All right. We shall move on then. Fake renewal notices. Mikey O'Connor had taken the lead on this one. So, Mikey, over to you.
Thanks, Greg. This is Mikey. Thanks, Marika, for getting the draft that James and I put together up in front of us. I'll just run us through this super quickly. The first part is the definition that's in our working papers right now. And then what we did is we summarized the conversation that we had last time and listed three sort of desired actions by the bad guys. One is to get an unnecessary fee or to slam somebody into a different registrar sort of without due notification, and then finally obtain credentials or domain authorization codes to actually steal the name. And I think that in general it's the middle result. This is really just a slamming kind of activity most of the time, but these were the three things that we talked about. One of the questions that Greg posed in the call was, well, what's the issue to ICANN? And much of this is just summarizing the conversation that we had last time. We came up with three. One is that it's an inter-registrar transfer kind of issue, sort of a deceptive practice. Another is that it could conceivably be a domain hijacking kind of thing. And the third is, in almost every case, probably an abuse of the WHOIS system, obtaining contact information inappropriately through WHOIS. One of the questions that we raised on the call was, well, what's ICANN's role in all this? And again, summarizing, we concluded that there are really two. If the if the perpetrator is a registrar or a reseller, then ICANN policy applies to them through the RIA or other consensus policy. If the perpetrator is not a registrar, ICANN still has a role, but it falls more into the inter-register transfer, hijacking, or who is abuse kinds of policy. And then towards the end of our conversation, we started discussing what we as the RAA, or as the Registration Abuse Working Group, ought to do about this. And we came up with several options. One would be to refer it to the RIA working group if enforcement tools need to be added to the RIA. Another would be to refer this issue to the Who Is working groups because one of the things that doesn't seem to be clear is what the sanctions are for abuse of Who Is. It's against consensus policy, but and shows up in the RIA, but it's not clear who actually has to enforce it or who gets to enforce it. Another would be to refer it to the IRTP working group for the discussion around urgent return. And another was to refer it to the post-expiration domain name recovery working group when it touched on hijacking. And then the final option would be simply to keep this issue in a lump and refer it to the proposed PDP that we're going to suggest, the Registration Abuse PDP, as a way to sort of keep the issue all in a bundle. The concern that was expressed last time was that if we send it off to the other working groups, we run the risk of it getting lost shuffle, and perhaps because it was, you know, there's the old story of the blind people taking a look at an elephant. We are, in fact, in a way, blinding people by doing this because we give it a very specific facet to be discussed by a whole bunch of different working groups, and it might be a good idea to keep it all in one place. So I think that the primary conversation today is probably to see where we fall amongst these disposition alternatives. I'll bring us back to that in a minute. But then James and I went off and took a look at the Domain Registry of America. There was an interesting post on a blog that posted one of the email letters that are now being sent by Domain Registry of America. And so we just wrote a little case study that I won't drag you all the way through. It just sort of puts in, you know, gives us an example of something to look at, where what they basically did is they send an email to the hapless domain registrant saying that they've attempted a domain transfer, which they probably have, and the transfers failed because the registrant has no interest in transferring the name. So then they send the notice that says that it's failed, and then give the registrant the steps to make a transfer. And if the transfer or if the registrant is naive or just befuddled by this very technical sounding, official sounding email, they might be duped into transferring their name from their current registrar to Domain Registry of America. Now, DROA is, in fact, either a registrar or affiliated with a registrar named NameJuice or Brandon Gray Internet Services, and thus they fall into that category of registrar or reseller and are presumably subject to enforcement actions from ICANN. And so it may simply be that the tools are already there. I mean, if you read through this, there are several apparent infractions that have to be investigated. Probably the most significant one is the abuse of Who Is. And it may just be that ICANN already has the tools that it needs to address this. And if this is a generalizable case, there may simply need to be different enforcement actions. So that concludes my report. I think that maybe what we do is have sort of a general discussion for a few minutes and then hone in on the suggested disposition, and if we can come to consensus on that, then I think we're pretty much ready to go.
Well, first, thank you, Mikey and James, for working on this. And the material you've presented, by the way, is going to be easy to insert into a draft of a report, so that's also very helpful. Thank you for that. I do see Marika's hand raised. Marika?
Yes, this is Marika. I just had a question. You know, you provide an example here of one reseller registrar that's known to use these practices. My question was more like, is there any indication of how many complaints or actual cases of people falling for the fake renewal notices, how often that actually happens? I don't know if James, for example, has any feedback on many people then, you know, coming back to GoDaddy and say, oh, well, we didn't know and we were tricked into this. And I'm happy as well to check with compliance to see if this is an issue where many complaints are received, which might give us as well a better indication as to what those complaints specifically are and identifying which category then those would specifically fit, or whether we see that indeed all of those different areas might be applicable and worth pursuing.
James, you want to take this one? Or do you want me to be a guy?
Yeah, thanks, Marika. And I'm sure, although I haven't discussed this with our teams, I'm sure that this is something we deal with on a continuous basis with spikes in activity whenever there are another wave of these messages would be going out, similar to fraud or spam attempts. One thing that Mikey and I did discuss, and I don't know if it's explicitly called out here earlier or if it may not be part of the DROA case study, but a lot of times these messages will not necessarily take the form of a request or instructions on how to transfer, but they will initiate contact via a fake past due invoice and threaten things like, you know, credit action or legal action against the registrant if they don't follow these steps. So I think that there's, the method of communication and the style of the communication, the way it's initiated, also plays a role here because they really use scare tactics to try and get these folks to remove the locks and cough up the authorization codes.
This is Greg. I've heard of the Maine Registry of America. It's been going on for a while, it's my understanding. Do we have examples of those kinds of letters or messages to registrants?
Mikey has an email here, but I think it would be interesting to also if we could scan some of the snail mail letters that they send that look like the overdue invoices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Mikey. I get them, but they come, at least to me, kind of sporadically. I'd be happy to save the next one that comes if one comes before the end.
I'm betting Google could easily provide us
with
one.
this is Rod. I'm not on the computer, but I could probably wallpaper my office with the number that we get all the time. So I can find one and scan one if you want an example.
Yeah, I think I agree with James. This case study was a pretty narrowly drawn one, and it was mostly because it was DROA was a topic of conversation on our last call, but I think it's a good idea to get examples of other forms of this activity so that it's not just narrowly cast as this one, because for sure I've seen those letters, and they're quite intimidating. First time you get them. I've also started getting them in foreign languages, which means I have to then translate them, and the translation is often rough, and then that makes it even more intimidating, and so I'm sure that there are lots of variations of this that we could include in a packet. I think it's a good idea to do that.
Okay. This is Greg. I think Marika's and Faisal's hands are up, but those might be old.
No, I just raised my hand again.
Okay.
Marika. Just very briefly, I just quickly exchanged some instant messages with a colleague in the compliance team, and he actually indicated that he's not aware, or he hasn't received any complaints in relation to this issue. But I guess that might not say much because maybe people don't, complain about the actual fake renewal notice, but it might be, they consider it a hijacking of their domain name or, other issues. But on the fake renewal notice itself, apparently we don't seem to receive many specific complaints as such.
That's interesting. I think that's an interesting question to add to the pile because there's just from the folks on this call, I know that this goes on a lot, and it's interesting that nobody complains to ICANN about this.
Well, nobody. I mean, it was just, he specifically wasn't aware of it, but I'll ask him if he can, check and have a look. They do track the complaint to see if, we can provide some further details if there are any. So I'll follow up on that one.
There's a great deal of discussion about Domain Registry of America on the various GNSO email archives going back to 2005, according to Google. I see Bob Connolly, for example, talking about how this group has been deceiving, and this is a quote, deceiving people for years. We have been a primary target. The FTC issued an order against them, et cetera, et cetera. There's probably, if we dig, I would assume that there have been complaints.
Well, there's certainly, this is Mikey again, there's certainly been complaints to the FTC because they filed that injunction. It's interesting to me that ICANN is perhaps not perceived to be the right place to make that complaint, and that I think is a failing on our part, because we should be perceived to be a place to complain this sort of behavior.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of discussion about, here's a conversation between Champ Mitchell and Bruce Tonkin about it. I think what we should certainly do is let's see, as we said, if we can get more examples of these letters, including postal letters. I'm assuming there will be some posted publicly, and maybe if we also have some individual letters. I would be surprised, frankly, if nobody had ever complained about them to ICANN.
Greg, this is just a note. I'm not talking here in the historic sense. It's more about, current complaints. So,
yeah.
I didn't ask him the question, have people previously or in the past complained about this kind of behavior, so he might not be aware of that. So I will follow up and try to find out whether, this was an issue in the past and not anymore, or, whether we're still receiving complaints or we never have received complaints. That might help inform the discussion.
Okay. All right.
Martin here. Quickly, I just did a Google search just for fake renewal notices for domain names. There's quite a few registrars that have got warnings and contact information if they need to report anything. So I'm just wondering if it's worth searching out from a handful of registrars what sort of levels of complaints they get in directly and whether they feed those through or could feed those through. I think Melbourne IT's on there for a start. There's quite a few straight away on the search results on Google.
Yeah, the net registered is also on there. It's a great letter there.
So there's some examples, but what we probably haven't got any idea of from that is the quantity, and it might be just as well to seek input from a handful of large registrars, for instance, just to see if they do get much forwarded on to them.
Yeah, I see some evidence that at some point DROA was a reseller, and registrars actually had to drop them as a reseller. So that's an interest that fits into the question of, you know, is this an issue of the register? You know, if you have a problem with the reseller, should the issue get escalated to the registrar? Is the registrar responsible for what its resellers are doing, or is that the place to address it? So, Mikey, you had suggested that we think about these questions and try to come to some sort of a consensus. Would you like to continue to lead that discussion?
Sure, Greg. This is Mikey. If you roll back up just in front of the case study part of our little write-up, is where the list of disposition options is. And my preference at this stage of the game is to keep this in a clump rather than split off the individual pieces of it and hand them off to other groups. I think this falls into the registration of a domain name and thus constitutes registration abuse, so I think it would fit okay in the charter of PDP if we were to recommend it. And it's sort of those two things that at least make me lean to the last option rather than handing it off to others, but I think that's the conversation that we need to have now, and once that's done, then I take a sense of the group as to where we're at. Do you want me to actually run the conversation and look at Adobe Connect and stuff, Greg?
I am happy to do that.
Sure. Martin's got his hand up. Go ahead, Martin.
Oh, sorry, that's an old one.
That's a leftover. Anybody anybody else got feelings about this that they want to throw out there? Or is my summary just so good that everybody's in agreement?
Mikey, this is Greg. I have another option, which would be to put all those options out that you list under the dispositions, and ask the council which way they want to go. We might.
Yeah.
That'd be another way to do it.
I think if we were to do that, I would still like to put some editorial bias around that recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we will have taken a harder look at it than the council will. And so we might want to, you know, give them the list with the one that we favor if we can come to that. We've done that before, and I know we did it in IRTP a few times. And,
okay.
That might be a way to do that. Because I agree, it'd be good to give them the full array of choices, but at the same time, I think they're probably looking to us, if we've thought about it, to give them a suggestion. Bob? Oh, Bob is agreeing, I think. Sorry. My eyes are failing. Any other comments on this, or are we ready to sort of take a sense of the group? I think we're done here, Greg. I think maybe the sense of the group, if I can restate it, is that we'll provide the list of options with a recommendation from us that we include it in the proposed RAP PDP, and I'd be happy to take this draft back and run one more time through the mill and add on the result of this part of the conversation and come back next time with a revised draft.
Well, and to clarify, there might not be just one RAP PDP. If this was a discrete topic, it might become its own PDP. Because a PDP needs to have a very specific topic rather than incorporating several. So the language, which Marika can help us with, would be on that last bullet. Either you refer various questions to other existing efforts, or the recommendation would be that the council ask for an issues report, I guess, or however we're going to phrase it. And as we discussed last time, an issues report becomes, you know, the first step in a PDP process if that's what the council wants.
Yeah. That works for me. I can take that action and work that draft.
Okay.
Okay. I think that's it.
Awesome. Excellent work. Thank you.
Chuck, thanks. James, okay. Did all I have.
So what I think one of the things will happen is we've got good material here. We'll be able to pick this up, place it in a draft of an initial report. Everybody will have the chance to read through that again at that point. But it sounds like a lot of this will just move over intact, and that's great. Yeah. Okay. If nothing else on fake renewal notices, next item is who is access. And I posted a note as per our last meeting asking the ICANN compliance department some questions about material that they may have published in the past and whether they have any statistics on access and whether they have monitoring on who has accessibility. And Marika, do you, I know that you touched base with the compliance staff. Do you have any more information?
Yes, this is Marika. They will do their best to try to provide us with as much information as possible prior to the next meeting of the RFP working group next week.
Okay, by next week. Okay, that's great. Thank you. And please express our thanks to them as they work on that.
I will.
Okay. So it sounds like we'll get some more material during the course of the week, and we'll take a look at that and come back to it. Next item is domain tasting and kiting. We had some substantive discussion about that in previous meetings, and Marika was going back, and she had pointed out that we've got actually several different definitions. So we have some material up on the screen now. And Marika, would you like to walk through that?
This is Marika. Actually, the material I put up is what Mikey and James edited. I think it's probably more detailed than what I shared. I just provided information on what was done in the context of the domain tasting a working group, and I think this note provides more background, so probably better if Mikey or James maybe run through this one.
Okay.
This is Mikey, the originator of the hallucinatory homework assignment, which I dragged James through because we were sharing a Midwestern hallucination that day. I don't know what we were thinking. Anyway, James, feel free to chime in any old time. What we came up with is in the first section sort of a summary of kind of a murky evolution of the term domain kiting, which we just sort of tried to put a little historical background together. And the next chunk is the actual link to various references. So there's a link to the Bob Parsons blog where I think that he was actually the first to use the term kiting, although in his blog post he was really referring more towards what we now call tasting. Wikipedia then went ahead and came up with a post almost immediately after that, and this next section is the current version of that post, not the original one. Message Labs chimed in a couple of weeks later, back in 2006, with the notion of a disposable domain. So we really have three terms now on the table. And then I also put the link in for the issues report on domain tasting, which has a section describing domain kiting in it. Finally, our definition from the current working papers. And so then the next section, which is on the third page, I think, is possible clarifications. So we came up with three versions: domain tasting, domain kiting, and disposable domains. And then sort of in the same vein as the last little section, possible things we could do as a working group. One would be to refine those definitions a bit, although I think that they're actually not too bad. They're just sometimes confused. And then the rest is summarizing the call, really. One thing that we thought on the call we might want to do is check with other working groups to see if there's definitions that we could use. And I tried to pull some of that out. And then the last thing that came up on the call was to maybe do some research to see how widespread domain kiting actually is as a problem. Greg mentioned on the call that he had taken a look at one of his registry databases and hadn't found much, and that seems to be sort of the theme. But it might be a good idea to broaden that research and perhaps formalize it a bit. And then if, in fact, there is kiting going on, which is very much an open question right now, the final thought would be to perhaps use the excessive delete policy as a way to address this. So I think that the questions in front of the group really are, again, right here at the end, what sorts of things do we want to do as a working group? And with that, Greg, do you want me to do the call thing again, or do you want to run the call?
Well, it looks like we have a couple of commenters first. We have James and then Marika.
Yeah, James.
Hi, Greg. This is James, and I just wanted to send my thanks and congrats to Mikey. This is he pulled this together much like the last one, and I just kind of was a second set of eyeballs going over it afterwards. I wanted to point out that we did identify three rough categories of this, what we're characterizing under the umbrella of AGP abuse, tasting, kiting, and the disposable domain issue, which I have a lot of questions about, and that's fairly new from my perspective. But I should point out, or I think it's worth discussing, whether or not the existing excessive deletes policy covers all three examples, because it essentially puts the registrar financially on the hook for any excessive deletes, regardless of whether it's coming from tasting, kiting, or disposable domains. So I think that's... go ahead.
No, this is Greg. I can tell you that it does cover it.
The
excess deletions policy doesn't distinguish why the names are deleted or what they're being used for. It's just, were they deleted in the ad grace period? If so, and you exceed your minimum, then your registrar does get dinged for it. And if
exactly.
You had a lot of kiting, then those every time you re-registered it every 4 days, that would count against your excess deletions.
This is Mike.
Right, and so
just to break in on this, I think the tricky bit would be if somebody was kiting across registrars, and then they could spread that pain across a lot of different registrars. I think the place that we need to go to find out whether the kiting part is happening is the registry. And there, I don't think that the AGP would necessarily touch this if they hopped across 20 or 30 registries. I mean, admittedly, it would be a logistical nightmare, but you could conceivably avoid the AGP abuse provisions by shopping.
This is Greg. I mean, I can look at it again pretty easily in the .info registry. I can tell if it's happened there.
I think that would be very useful. What would really be useful is if we could enlist VeriSign to take a look at .com real quick, because clearly that's, if it's going to happen anywhere, that's the place. I don't know how
also see Marika's hand raised.
Yeah, it doesn't work out. I actually was just going to make the point that you know, James and Greg, you made as well, that this, you know, seems to fall under the current AGP policy. And also wanted to note that we expect an update to the Geneva Council on this policy, I think, in the next week or 2 weeks or so. I know it's in the process of being developed, so that might provide some further information on the policy and its effectiveness.
Marika, this is Mikey. Is there any chance that we could influence that report in the remaining 2 weeks to have somebody take a look at some of the other registries, especially .com, but just about any of them, just to see if kiting is going on at all?
I think the report specifically looks at domain tasting and the AGP. I don't think at this point this group can like influence the outcome, but I don't think there's anything preventing this group to comment or make suggestions as to, you know, how the next version might include certain information that this group might feel is currently lacking.
That'd be neat. Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, well, I'll mark that down as an item, and Marika will bring us more news as info becomes available. Strikes me, actually, I think we've now got some industry standard definitions nailed down. Tasting has become a choice term, and we understand that kiting is different. So I think the definitional work actually is pretty straightforward, and we've got it nailed down. Does anyone really disagree? And if you like, what I can do is I'll check in the .info registry this week to see if we had any examples for what that's worth. That would be one registry. Does anybody recommend any additional actions?
This is Mikey. Actually, Marika, I think, just came up with perhaps the one that we would want to recommend, which is that if the AGP working group is sort of monitoring the situation on an ongoing basis, perhaps what we want to do is suggest a minor expansion of their current monitoring to include kiting.
Mikey, just to correct something, it's not the AGP working group that's doing that. It's actually ICANN staff that receives, I think, monthly reports from the different registries in which they provide data on the leads that have occurred over the course of that period. So it's ICANN staff that's gathering that information and compiling the report. It's, I think, part of one of the requirements under the new policy that, I think, every 3 or 6 months, an update needs to be provided to the GeneSo Council so they can actually assess how effective the policy is. So I just want to make that comment. I mean, it still might be relevant, but it's actually not the AGP working group that's doing that work.
This is Mikey again. Then the definition of the data that's being collected is probably embedded in the policy, correct? In which case we might have to go so far as to recommend a slight change in the policy, or is the definition loose enough that the staff could simply expand their data collection efforts without a change in policy?
I would need to look into that, because I actually am not that familiar with the policy as it was developed, so I can check on that to see you know, what information is included there and how that was defined, or, you know, whether it's a staff assessment to decide, you know, which information might be relevant or not. I can look into that. I don't know if Greg, if you have further information on that, because I think your, you know, the registries are providing this kind of information, so you might have more details on that.
Well, I have to provide ICANN reports every month. And they list all the deletions and grace period by registrar. And that information gets posted on the ICANN website with all the other registries' reports. But I don't, other why they're being deleted or for what reason, I don't have any insight into that.
Greg, this is Mikey again. Do you have to provide the actual domain names that get deleted or just a summary?
Just a summary.
So if we were to try to track down kiting, the data that the staff gets today wouldn't contain the data.
It wouldn't tell you.
Yeah, okay. So never mind. Sorry about that.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, the document that we have up on the screen right now actually contains excellent material. I think that would be ported over into the initial report draft as well. Do we need any additional discussion of it at this time? Like I said, I'll go try to do some kiting research this week in my registry. But do we want to move on in the meantime to the next topic? Okay. Not hearing any other opinions. So if not, what I'd like to do is move on to stolen or fraudulent credentials. The issue here is basically criminals using stolen credit cards and identities to sign up domain names. As we discussed last time, this is a way of looking at the malicious conduct issue. And the question was, I think from the last meeting, is first question is this in policy making scope? We know that criminals do this; they do it every day. But the question is, is it something that I can do something about? Is it within policy making scope? What are some of the issues involved? What came up last time was, can you make registrars adhere to certain credit card validation processes, for example? I want Rod to weigh in on this one because he's been interested in the topic. I also see James's hand raised. James, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, Greg, thanks. This is James, and I just wanted to weigh in on this, that this is entirely outside of scope of ICANN policy. Credit card validation and monitoring stolen credentials and things like of that nature are going to be imposed and enforced by the bank or the other credit card merchant account or other relationships that a registrar may have outside of ICANN. While certainly I agree that this is a problem, I think that it affects different models of registrar businesses different ways. The question assumes that there's a registrar that has a retail-oriented market focus and that is accepting credit cards as a default method of payment, when in fact the registrar could be a guy on with a roadside toll booth accepting shiny beads in exchange for domain name registrations. I mean, it really presumes quite a bit about the registrar's business model and business practices to suggest that this is somehow within the scope of ICANN policy. But again, not to state that this isn't a problem, just inappropriate for this particular venue.
Okay, thank you. I see Mikey's hand raised.
I'm looking at the document that's in front of us, and it says use of stolen or fraudulent credentials at the bottom of page 2. And I'm wondering if we've gotten ourselves sidetracked on the credit card issue. Because it doesn't say credit card credentials. It says credentials, which could mean stolen account credentials at the registrar. And I'm just curious if we've got a definitive word on that, or am I looking in the wrong place? Because I think James is right. In terms of the business process of collecting money and credit cards, that is pretty variable across a lot of different business models. But I think that to the extent that it's stolen credentials from a registrar that's being used to facilitate likely hijacking, that is within scope. But I'm just not sure what those... It's an awfully short bullet, so I need re-education on that, I guess.
And, Mikey, just real quickly, this is James. I would say that my objection was to, in terms of scope, was to either of those being included within ICANN policy. Just because it's the stolen credentials presumes that the registrar is operating some sort of a domain control panel when, in fact, maybe their interaction with customers is via spam or fax or phone or possibly even a dedicated client that clients download and install on their machine. So it just assumes too much, and it delves a little too deeply into the internal workings of a registrar. It doesn't necessarily take into account all the variety that's out there in the registrar ecosystem.
Well, this is Mikey again. Just to push back gently on that second point. You know, I can remember when we did this all by email. And, you know, it seems to me that you can steal somebody's credentials irrespective of the mechanism by which the credentials are being used to validate the transaction. And that to the extent that that's what our definition is all about, I'm not sure I buy that last argument. I'm not sure I feel terribly strongly about this because it's illegal, and it may not need ICANN policy, but I'm not sure that I've got a good sense of what we meant when we wrote that bullet down.
This is Greg. Maybe one way of saying it is, well, there's the stolen credit card issue, a stolen identity being used to register a domain name. Mikey, I think you're also raising the issue of somebody getting into somebody else's registration account at a registrar.
Or not. I mean, you know, it could be that it's not to give credit to James's point, that's one way to do it. But, you know, in the old days, there weren't accounts at registrars. There were just emails that went back and forth. And if you could present and fax went back and forth, present the right credentials, you could steal it. So it's
isn't that a... But to me, it represents either it's a hijacking issue, which has other solutions, or it's a data breach issue at a provider. And I don't know if that's in scope for ICANN to get involved in either.
Yeah, I agree. And so, you know, I don't want to belabor this one. This is not one that's real high on my hit parade, but I just wasn't clear.
Okay.
What exactly we were trying to go after. Presumably, this list came from people who put things on the list. And it doesn't sound like the person who put this one on the list is on the call, leaping in and saying, well, this is what I meant. Does anybody remember why this one got on the list?
Perhaps it came from the issues report.
It's Martin here. What we did in the outset was just to list as many different types of issues for domains and the registrations of abuse that was recognised. So there was a lot listed down in the first instance, but with a caveat that as we go through, we've got to decide whether they actually do form part of the scope of this team or not. And it was better to, you know, put more on there than and whittle them down rather than forget some. I mean, thinking back on this particular one, we see a lot of issues in terms of domains registered using fraudulent or the stolen credentials, because this goes back to who is issues. It goes back to the point that most of the fraud or unwanted activities on the internet
are going to be hidden behind stolen credentials. Now, this probably, I'll probably labour on this point again, but if you look at the situation, this is where consumers get harmed. If there is a brand involved, and it doesn't have to be in this particular case, there is potential for brand owner harm as well. But the primary one here is consumer harm. Behind the scenes, there is volumes of these domains registered, where the registrar take no responsibility, if you like, apart from saying in their policies this is what you should use it for legitimate purposes, etc., etc. But there's so much activity that just allows this to go on, where if there was some pre-screening or some simple mechanisms that may be unwanted, I would imagine, by this by the sort of registrar community, but would actually ensure that who is actually registering a domain is who they say they are, and they're using credit cards, for instance, that belong to them. That there may be a process which, you know, takes a few days before a domain name goes live. So I know some of those have been cited in the past. So I think that's where the use of stolen fraudulent credentials came from in the past.
Yes, and it's the vector by which a lot of undesirable activity takes place. The harm, of course, also is not only to consumers but also to the institutions that may have to absorb some of those losses. Is that correct?
I would expect so. So perhaps there is an issue here that, you know, for registrars in particular, where there is a cost of doing business here that on its own may not be a particular huge problem for the registrar, but altogether in the registrar community, it could be a quantitative problem. I'm not sure how much of that information is shared, if at all, between registrars. Because I'm assuming then that the domains, once they are recognised as problematic, and whatever activity was running on the back of it has been switched off, these domains just float around again, waiting for people to either pick them up through automatic methods or just left to delete off at some stage.
Mikey, Martin has dragged my needle up a little bit with his comments. I'm fairly ambivalent about this one, but I would hate to just dismiss it out of hand, I guess, because it seems like the point that's being made here is a really good one, which is if everybody is aware that it's going on and nobody's really doing anything about it and a lot of people are being harmed as a result, then that's a topic worthy of conversation, it seems to me.
Mikey, this is James. Oh, sorry, Greg.
I was going to recognize you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just have issue with the idea of nobody is doing anything about it. You know, we, as you may imagine, we have a very large and dedicated staff working on this 24/7. And that's, of course, at our cost. I have no idea what the traffic level is in this type of incident, in these types of incidents, but I know that, you know, the feasibility of making each of these somehow governed by an ICANN policy and getting ICANN involvement in some of the decisions that have to be made really in minutes according to our procedures is probably unrealistic. Registrars have to be very mindful of this if they are going to offer registrations and accept credit cards as a method of payment. If they do not, their banks or their websites or their customers' attorneys will make sure they're not a registrar for very much longer. I don't really know that this is... I mean, for example, one of the most common or frequent ways to breach a registrar is to steal someone's free email account credentials at Yahoo and Google and MSN, and then to request a password change. This is it's a very simple process. However, I don't necessarily hear a lot of calls for, you know, ICANN needs to get involved into how Google manages their internal password controls, or Yahoo or MSN for that matter. So I'm just kind of pointing this out here that this is a problem. It is something that I think registrars take very seriously, and at their own cost, make major investments to thwart and control these issues. But turning them into anything that is either monitored or requires involvement by ICANN, I think is going down the wrong path and doesn't lead us to closer to a solution. Just complicates the matter.
James, it's Marcin here, and I would probably agree to a lot of what you've said there, although I would point out that within this group it doesn't necessarily mean policy changes. It may be recommending best practice or minimum standards perhaps, and you may well surpass what minimum standard could be potentially recommended. I'm not sure. I'm just trying to make sure that we don't lose sight of the fact that, you know, this is probably a big problem, but because it's all bitten down into little chunks between registrars, between registries, it may not appear a big headache, but to the community at large and ultimately the consumers, they're the ones that are affected the most. We probably just chip away at things just to manage the cost levels and the risks as best we can. But I'm just wondering if there is more potential work to be done in this space. I would suspect that because of the low value linked to domains, that most of this stuff just gets washed away as, you know, cost of doing business. It doesn't get recognized as fraud. If there's a problem with a domain name that's been registered with a stolen card or whatever, that this probably just goes down as chargebacks either through to the registrar or to the issuing bank. So I think it's a very difficult one to get an idea of the scale, because there's no real information that we can tap into on a collective basis.
Mikey's ahead of me, but I would like to respond to Martin when you get a chance.
Why don't you go ahead, James, and then I'll throw another one out there.
Okay, Martin, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is an issue, and this is something that impacts registrants and Internet users, and it's something, again, that we are very committed to working through. There are a variety of other groups that we are involved in that have made this area its primary focus, both for information sharing and for the development of best practices and the coordination of different efforts across the across the spectrum of registries and registrars. I think I noticed a couple of folks on this particular call are also involved in those groups as well. So, my strong reluctance to even discuss this issue within, you know, the form of an ICANN meeting is not and shouldn't be seen as any, discounting or dismission of the scope of the problem. It's just that it is something that we are very focused on addressing through other forums and other venues.
Now, this is Mikey. That's actually what I was going to mention, is that as this conversation progresses, I was reminded of especially the conversations in IRTP and post-expiry domain name recovery, where have been talking about that, and I'm not sure that that means that we can't speak about it here. I think that what it means is that we would want to speak in such a way that amplifies and reinforces what's going on in those other working groups so that we aren't putting his banner in the works, but that's a different posture than out of scope for ICANN altogether. And so I'm warming up to the idea that we, at a minimum, ought to do something along the lines of referring this to some of the other working groups. The trick here is that both IRTP and post-expiry have slightly different focuses. IRTP only will look at it if it's a transfer across registrars, and post-expiry domain name recovery will only look at it if it's, you know, after the domain has expired. So it's a problem, you know, especially if we're expanding the term credentials beyond credit cards, making it credit cards and account credentials at the registrar. I'm thinking this is something that we can talk about.
Can I get a word in here? This is Rod. Unfortunately, as this meeting is timed horribly for me, and I have been only able to listen for the last 20 minutes, given my drop-off schedule of kids and all that. Credentials, just to respond to Mike's last point here, is chosen very carefully to not exclude things besides credit cards. Or, in other words, it's much more than credit cards. Credentials is a legal term. Access credentials, in particular, are anything that can be used, or actually, I shouldn't say access credentials. Credentials have legal meaning, and they can mean lots of things besides credit cards. In this context, I think we have explored some of those. You've got credit cards, you've got account credentials, you've got email addresses and email accounts that can be used for various reasons. You've got identities themselves. You know, a lot of people, victims of identity theft, involved in these kinds of registrations. So there's lots of different aspects here. So I think we've gotten maybe a little focused in on one aspect of this whole issue. And I would propose, you know, I've got a lot to say in this. In fact, way too much to say in the next 9 minutes. Let me put together some terms around this. But I think that where ICANN policy or ICANN involvement is not, you know, not running a program saying we're going to screen credit cards for registrars. I think where ICANN has a lot of ability to do things is in helping with framing the problem, setting minimum standards, making sure that the issue is understood by all registrars and people involved in the registration process, not just those who are really doing a lot already. Because where we find most problems are in people who aren't the ones on these calls or in these meetings. But ICANN, as a central body, has a real sway in how those companies and organizations run their operations in the end. And there's a big hammer that can be used there if there's people who are basically just not paying attention to who's registering what for what purpose. So that's my quick 2 cents.
Okay, Rod, it sounds like you're volunteering to write text for the group to consider.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Do you think you'll be able to deliver that this week?
Yeah, this has been something I've been meaning to do for the last couple. I will endeavor to get that done this week, yes.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. We have about 8 minutes left. Let's take that as an action item, and that'll go up on the list. When it does, we should also, of course, feel free to discuss on the list as well. All right, we have 8 minutes left. What I'd like to do is go back to our agenda, and we're going to have to skip over cyber squatting and uniformity of contracts for now. However, discussion of those topics is available on the lists. Barry had set up a draft of uniformity of contracts, background, and recommendations. I sent some personal comments up on that in the middle of last week, so that's up. I would suggest that if you have not yet read those, please do so during the course of the week. That's important material. I would like to see everyone's comments on the current status of those drafts. Of course, since time is getting short for our initial report, if you don't comment now, we're going to have very limited time for you to comment in the future. I would like you to get your substantive comments out sooner rather than later. So please comment on those documents on the list. Speaking of schedule, I sent around our remaining meetings. We have one meeting December 14th. The next meeting after that would be December 21st, which is the week of Christmas. I'd like to poll you guys as to whether or not we should have a meeting that week or whether it's possible given your vacation schedules. So if you could, go to Adobe. And if you can make a December 21st meeting, please put a check mark up there.
Consider this a check mark for me there, Greg. This is Rod.
Okay. Okay, we've got Greg, Marika, Barry, Bob, James, and Mikey, and Martin, and myself could do it. So that's almost everybody. So let's pencil one in for December 21st. I'm glad at least most of us can make it. I think we're probably going to need that time. So let's pencil that in. Then we've got the four meetings in January. January 4th is penciled in as the deadline for all text. Okay, so we've discussed many topics over the months. The goal is that we have text which includes an overview, background, and draft recommendations for each of those topics. January 4th is the point where we're thinking Marika takes all that and dumps it into an initial report document. Then what we're going to have to do is go through that document and make additional edits and tweaks, and we have to have a process to discuss the recommendations specifically. What we have to do is kind of figure out where we all stand, how close or how far apart the opinions are on those recommendations. You know, walk them through, see if we can gel into consensus on as many as possible. And then we'll, at some point in January, we'll have to go back through and measure levels of consensus again. We've been given basically we have a deadline of February 12th now. In order for anything to be discussed at the ICANN meeting in Nairobi, Kenya, in early March, everything needs to be received by ICANN and posted no later than the 15th, which is a Monday. So if we're going to have our initial report done, like we've promised, we really have to have it done and sent into ICANN on Friday, February 12th. That's our drop-dead date. So what I have right now is four meetings to go through those, go through the initial report. We may have some, you know, Marika and I have been discussing some ways to do some polling offline, especially on the recommendations, to measure where we are initially and then do a final tallying of the levels of support and get everybody's names down. So we'll need to do some of that in meetings. We'll do some of it probably in a poll format, which will let you look at everything also at your leisure off the conference calls. So I think we're coming down to the nitty-gritty here. If we want some text on something, it really needs to be written within the next 4 weeks. And again, that January 4th deadline hopefully is not an initial drafting of something. It's something that's been put out there at least for the group to comment on, like we've been doing with uniformity of contracts. So we're coming down on the nitty-gritty. We're running out of time to discuss issues. We are coming into a time where we need to discuss the specifics of what we're going to say in the report. So, again, this is where the rubber hits the road. We need text to be developed. If text is not developed on a topic, then it may not make it into the report. So that's kind of where we stand on the schedule. Does anybody have any questions about what's going to be happening over the next 2 months? Marika, I see your hand up.
Yeah, this is Marika. I actually have a question in relation to our previous discussion on having a call on the 21st of December. I just want to know if I can give that meeting as a deadline to the compliance team on the WHOIS issue so they have a little bit more time. My initial assumption was that next week would be our last call before the Christmas holidays. Would that be okay?
No, I would like to keep the ICANN staff on that schedule they agreed to, if possible.
Okay.
Once we get the material, we still have to digest it, see if we have any follow-up questions, and then discuss in the group what it actually means.
Okay,
so,
I'll leave it then at the 14th.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. Any other questions or comments? Okay. All right. Well, that sets our meetings through mid-February. Thank you for your discussions today on these topics. As always, I'll send out the action items for follow-up this week. Thanks again for good discussion. And if no other comments, we'll close the call and we'll reconvene next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Greg.
Cheers, Greg.
Thanks.
Take care, everyone. Have a good week.
Yeah.